Hello and welcome back to Cooking the Books with me, Julie Smith, the podcast which takes us through four food moments from the books of our favourite food writers. It's about all of life through the prism of food. And this week I'm with Georgina Hayden, our favourite Cypriot food writer, to talk about Greekish.
I made baklava cheesecake. Maya, she was staring at me and she's chewing and she had nothing to say. And I think that she just looking at me and nodding and then she just put her hands up as if to say, nailed it.
This is a mashup of all that she is. North London, second generation Greek Cypriot, with full support from her Cypriot Yaya, her grandmother. I asked her whether the ish in the title had to do with how she feels about who she is after three books and 19 years in British food.
So my first book, Stirring Slowly, was much more about my environment and what I was going through at the time. And it was much more about the recipes I was cooking at that point in time. And then I went on my journey of looking to tradition and ancestry and my family and my heritage with Taverna, which was much more about my upbringing. So then I was starting to reminisce. So it was much more about, you know, present, then going back in time to childhood and the restaurant and my family. And then with Nestissima, I went full deep PhD. I mean, I don't know why I haven't got a doctorate for that yet. Can I? Can someone? Honestly, the amount of work in that book, I was like, listen, OFM award was like the highlight of my life. But jokes aside, that book was obviously much more in depth. And then Greekish is sort of the antidote to Nestissima. Nestissima came out 2 years ago. And yesterday was the first day of Greek Lent, of Orthodox Lent. And I went and cooked for 160 people at the Hellenic Centre in central London. And there was a massive celebration. Like, the first day of Lent is huge for us. It's a holiday. There was live music. It was like a wedding, basically. You know, it's still relevant. And hopefully something like Nestissima will always be relevant. But Greekish is more about the here and now. I've almost done a full circle. I've come back to Stirring Slowly, my first book, in that I'm writing about the food I'm cooking now. I am busy. We're all busy. And they are recipes that are inspired by my upbringing, but they're much more about where I am in my life. So I've got all these this amazing Greek and Cypriot family, but actually I'm here in England and it's all a bit of a mishmash, and I've got these kids and I've got this juggle and we're all juggling. And it's interesting because that book, I was talking to one of my editors recently, I said, why did Greekish almost kill us more? And I cannot tell you, I'm not exaggerating. I don't think I'm wearing rose tinted glasses. I mean, Nestissima was hard, but Greekish sort of sent me over the edge a bit. And I think it's because it's my first book since Stirring Slowly, and I'm sort of more well known now, where they're my recipes. You know, if with Nestissima, if you had a problem with the recipes, go and talk to the local priest. Go and take it out with my granny. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you've got a problem with tradition, I that's not my problem. Whereas these recipes are mine. And so, you know, the sort of development and the in-depthness, I just slightly sent myself mad. But actually, they're much more accessible. And, you know, it's been really fun. And I think it's important. I remember Diana Henry, I think, has said this to me before. And I know Jamie, I used to work with Jamie Oliver. You know, you can write the passion projects and also you need to write this sort of every day as well. And I think that's life, isn't it? It's good to write, have a balance.
So I'm going to unpack all of that as best I can for people who don't know necessarily all about you. And tell me if this interpretation is right. So, you know, Stirring Slowly was an absolutely, it was based on tragedy. It was your stillborn child who really inspired that. And the small food world that you kind of inhabited that time was so, people were so with you.
Yeah.
And Stirring Slowly was a beautiful meditation on how to put your life back together. And you found yourself through food. Food found you in a way that was very beautiful. And it really opened up a whole conversation about what food is in people's lives. Taverna, yeah, is your story of your family in North London, the Greek Cypriots, your dad being very loud. But, you know, the whole sort of the story of your food through that prism of your family. Your parents used to own a taverna and you lived upstairs, and that's the story of your life. Nestissima was where we had a really good chat about that on Cooking the Books, and you can scroll back through the archives and listen to it. It's a really interesting story about the veganness of not just Greek Cypriot food, but for Orthodox food. So you go Russian, you go, you know, Central Asian.
Yes.
You look at all the kind of the Orthodox food, and it's about the religiousness of fasting.
100%.
And fasting is very often vegan. And that was a really interesting take on, you know, everybody was looking at vegan food at that time. You know, how can we do vegan? And I was getting, you know, 15 minutes with vegan. Yep. Anything you can do, I can do vegan and all that kind of stuff. You were priests. You know, really an interesting way of doing that, because so many people around the world actually do follow that. I was talking to Dina Mackey last night about Ramadan. And, you know, there's a lot of people who really are observant, not necessarily terribly religious, but they are observant at certain times. And Lent is one of those. It affects a lot of people around the world. So really, really interesting.
Yes.
This one is you and your family, and it's all, you know, gathering all together and talking to you, and your dad, and your, you know, and putting it all together, your kids trying it all out. It's a mashup of all that you are. You know, you've written yourself real, really, haven't you? I mean, we've watched you grow up.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely my most, it's a strange one because for me, they're all very personal. You know, Stirring Slowly is super personal. And it's, for me, it's not just about tragedy. It's just about mindful cooking. So I've had so many amazing messages of people from over the years where they're like, I bought it for a friend of mine who's having a hard time, or, you know, my friend's got an illness, or it's just, it's more about the idea of just like reconnecting with cooking when you're going through any time of hardship, or you just feel like you can't cook anymore. And I think that's something where whatever you go through in life, we will all have those moments for whatever reasons, you know, and that's just my story. But it's also a joyful book. There's lots, it's beautiful, and the recipes I'm proud of. But it's, you know, they're all personal for different reasons. You know, Taverna couldn't be more personal. There's photos of me as a child and my restaurant, and, you know, so they're all personal. But it's funny that this one, I feel like as I've got older, my tone of voice, I've just become more confident in myself. And I think that comes with age, that comes with experience. You know, I've been in the food world for almost 20 years. It's 19 years now, you know, and I think there comes a confidence with that. Like, and that's not to diminish anyone who's starting out or in their 20s. And I'm not saying, oh God, I know more than anyone else. You know, I'm still learning. We're always learning, or everyone is. But, you know, I'm in my 40s now. I feel much more confident. I feel like I've got stuff to say. And equally, if, you know, I feel justified in saying, if I want to make a cookie recipe that's got crumbled feta in it, well, I will. And it's delicious because I've made it a million times. And I, you know, I feel secure in the knowledge that I can develop a decent recipe. You know, we've all got our strengths and whatever. And that's like, I will get there. And I think that just comes with time, doesn't it? Experience. I feel like Greekish is a very confident book. I had fun with it. There's some playfulness, which I don't think I've had before. I wanted to write a chapter called Things on Sticks, so I did.
You know, what is really interesting is that I think that the conversation has changed since Nistissima. I think girdle oil is largely to blame for that, and I think that's great. There's a conversation now about hybridity, second generation. There's more permission to use who you are, to use more actual voice. You know, we're Gerd, I mean, I'm always talking about Gerd on this show, because I think that what he did was he started that conversation saying, look, my parents came from India, but I come from Leicester, and now I live in Hackney, and I'm a queer man, and I have all these different influences, and I am a mashup. So my book is a mashup of all that that is. And I think that what he did was he opened the door to let 100%. Everybody else come in and go, me too. Were you aware of that, or is that just so much more part of the conversation now that you've kind of done that naturally?
I think Gerd is amazing. I love him and I love his book and I think he's brilliant. But I think it's definitely of a time as well. You obviously have got people like Ravinder who talks a lot about mashups. You know, there's so many people doing that. I think we are just of a time where that second generation, we are of an age now where we can talk about it. You know, it's we've not been in this situation before because that wasn't there wasn't that second generation. So we are all of an age, those of us whose parents were born elsewhere, or, you know, grandparents born elsewhere. And yeah, I think 100% people like Gerd and many others, amazing food writers, that are saying, actually, yeah, the way my yaya or your grannies or your mums or dads did it is brilliant. But actually, this is also great. And, you know, you're always going to get people who say, oh my God, I tried it your way and it's amazing. But then you're going to also get people like, oh my God, you know, Banayamo, I'm doing my cross here. That's not how my ayah does it. That's not how my nonna does it. You know, that is life. And we all have, you know, that sort of nostalgia with food. I think the thing is with food, it's so heavily laced with nostalgia that when people do things differently, you're going to ruffle some feathers. And as long as you're confident, and that's what I think, why I wrote Greekish now. That's why I go back to that confidence. I think I've of an age and I've paid my dues. I've worked hard and I've been in the industry long enough now that I feel confident enough to say, well, actually, I'm going to make my pasticcio, my macaron de forno, in one pan. My dad does it in 4 pans, the traditional way. I did it in one pan. And, you know, in 10 years ago, if I did that, if someone came at me, I would probably be like, oh, no, I haven't done it right. Whereas now I'm like, actually, that's okay too. And I think that is the beauty of ours, that second generation voice.
Yeah, yeah. And you'd say also, you know, when it comes to writing recipes, sometimes hiding behind tradition makes it easier. And you would then say, yes, you know, take it up with my ancestors. But, you know, you did try and mash up a load of ideas in here and you did feed them to your yaya and to your dad. What did they say when you did me these massive mashups?
Do you know what? My yaya, I will never forget. I love my yaya so much. And she's my biggest inspiration and everything. And my biggest critic. And I made baklava cheesecake, which I do think, oh, you know, it's really hard. Like, I'm so proud of this book. I love so many of the recipes, but I do think it's one of my favourite puddings. Anyway, I made it last year for Easter Sunday. Big deal for us. And she took a mouthful and she sort of stared at me. She's quite intense. Anyone who has my books will see her face pop up many times. She was staring at me and she's chewing. And she had nothing to say. And I think that she just looking at me and nodding. And then she just put her hands up as if to say, nailed it. And, you know, this is a woman like, she's very traditional, you know. But also, to be fair to her, she's 83 and she will call me because she's seen something on the Greek TV. And she's like, this person's done something and let's try it, you know. So she is up for trying stuff, actually. She is very experimental and she always has been. But she just held her hands up and looked at me and sort of just like nodded and was like, as in, like, you know, it was perfection. And for me, that was just like the biggest thrill ever. But she's been really supportive. My dad as well, you know, as is the way when you're juggling writing and testing and children. My parents live around the road. They're always around here. You know, it's like chaotic house. So they've tried so much of the food and I really respect their opinion and they've loved the recipe. So, you know, that's all that matters, isn't it, really?
Well, is it, though? Because you do put a lot of, it's called Greekish, and you're a Greek Cypriot. And, you know, we know the history of Greece and Cyprus, and this is very much about Greece.
Yeah.
It feels to me that you're trying to find your Greekness, not your Greekishness. Is it the same thing?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think it was more for me. I'm very much Cypriot first and foremost. And I think that's a really important thing to say. So it's a really interesting one. Cyprus, the older I get, the more I travel, from just the geography of Cyprus, the landscape of it. All you have to do is go to the Middle East and you see that Cyprus lends itself to the Middle, you know, it's much more Middle Eastern than it is like the landscape of Greece. You know, it isn't whitewashed blue, white buildings, blue roofs. It's nothing like that. You know, you go to the Middle East and you're like, oh, that's Cyprus. It's like very arid, dry, you know. So I don't think for me that it's me finding my Greekness, but it's more just that I am from the Greek part of Cyprus. And of course, the influences are thick and strong. And actually, there's lots of Cypriotness in there as well. There's so many things that flavours like cumin and coriander, which you just wouldn't get in Greece. But then equally, there's things like in the north of Greece, like where they still refer to as North Macedonia, where they use ginger, you know, salepi, which I've never tried in, which is an orchid root. I've never tried in Cyprus. So I think for me, it was more about making sure I did my due diligence, that I wasn't just, you know, I've traveled far and wide. And if I'm writing about this food, that I'm not just being like, oh, I went on holiday once to Greece, so I can, you know, because they are different. And let's be honest. And I think I think the ish comes, there's so many reasons for that ish. There's the Greekish, because I don't feel like I'm mainland Greek, but people want to say you're Greek Cypriot. It comes from the fact that I was born in England. It comes from the fact that I'm married to an Irish English man. It comes from the fact that I've got these children that are mixed. it's so multifaceted, the ish. I remember when I came up with the name, I was like, that's it. No one can tell me otherwise, you know? So I think the travel part of Greece was just to make sure that as I was writing, that I fully understood what I was writing about, because it's huge. Greece is a huge country. But for me, no, I'm Cypriot first and foremost. But, you know, I've written about Cyprus. Yeah. So it's more about the other part, you know, that Greek influence.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about the ish now. The Spanakopita fying, for example. So you're taking Spanakopita, which we all know and love, and then you're Spanakopita fying everything in a whole chapter on it. Tell us about that kind of concept.
Well, when I write books, I don't know how other people write books, but I write my books and I sort of brain dump and I do my proposal and then I write my chapters how I think they will be. And often things change and move. But it's quite a traditional book in that you have breakfasts, sides, snacks and starters. Then you've got mains split into two, so very quick ones. So the main chapter in the book is weeknight dinners. That was very important to me because most of our days in the week are weeknight. That's when we need fast and quick food. Then there's long, slow, sides and puddings. So that's just how it's broken down. But when I was writing it, you know, there was a few things that I wanted to talk about. So there's little sub-chapters. So there's the fact that I just love Spanakopita. And I think, you know, and I've been told by people who make my Spanakopita recipe from Taverna that I do a decent one. You know, I do a slightly different method to anyone else I know. My Ayad taught me we salt the spinach. We don't wilt it.
Yeah.
So you salt it and it's quite laborious. You have to squeeze that liquid out, but it makes it so much nicer. And as a result, I love Spanakopita and I like to make things Spanakopita-ish. So it's the idea that a simple risotto, super weeknighty, half an hour, but you fold in cheese and spinach, dream. Jacket potatoes, loaded jacket potatoes, scooping out the middle, lacing those flavours in there and rebaking them. Super cheesy for the kids. Fritters, you know, there's a whole journey. And then equally in the book, there's that little subchapter. Then there's a cheese little subchapter because Greek and Cypriot cheese to me is the best thing in the world. There's a little baklava chapter, you know. So I wanted to have the ability to talk about these very sort of well-known, maybe stereotypical Greek foods and flavours that people know, but have fun with them.
Yeah, but i.e. make them possible for our, you know, weekday dinner.
Exactly.
Easy peasy. So let's go into your food moments. The one pan pastizio is an example of that. I mean, actually, you say pastizio is very well known, but it's usually really laborious rather than difficult. Putting it in a one pan cuts through all of that. Tell us about that and why you chose this one.
Yeah, so a bit like the Spanakopita, which, you know, takes all day normally. Pastizio, as we call in Cyprus, magaronia de funnu, so same thing, different name. It's essentially a Greek lasagna, if you will, what some people like to call Greek lasagna. It is a ragu. That's one pan. Then you've got another pan for your pasta, which is long tubes, like really long tubes, thicker than bucatini, but think of bucatini. That's another pan. Then you've got another pan for your white sauce. That's three pans. We're on three now. And then you need the world's biggest, deepest roasting tray to layer all that up and bake it, right? So you're on four pans now. Listen, if I've got the time, it is a lovely, relaxing thing to do. Gorgeous, and it's heavenly. I was like, right, that to me, the pastizio, one pan pastizio, was almost one of the first recipes I wrote, because I was like, this to me summarizes the book. It's getting those classic flavors and ideas, but making them quick. So the idea is you use big pan, you make your ragu, you make it really wet, and then you cook the pasta in it. Delicious. Also, because we know pasta goes starchy and creamy, so you're cooking it in the ragu now, so that adds to the creaminess. Done. Job's a good one. Then don't make a white sauce. If you want to make some white sauce, go for it. Just mix together creme fraiche with egg yolks, spoon that on top, grate over a load of cheese and pop it under the grill. You've got one pan and a bowl. And it's so easy. It's so weeknight worthy. I will never forget on the photo shoot day, I've got this series of hilarious photos of the photographer and her assistant. They basically squirreled away the pan and they just sat there and ate the whole thing. It was honestly hilarious.
The amount of times I hear about the photographers eating all the food on the shoots is extraordinary.
She deserves it.
Your second food moment is the understated lentils and halloumi. Yeah. This is very store cupboardy, and it is a reminder of how more than half the world finds the least expensive ingredients the most delicious.
Yeah, so this one is another one that's a good representation of the book, I think. It's a love child. So you've got two classic Greek and Cypriot dishes there. In Greece, they call it phages. We call it phagi because our dialect's different. And phagi is basically lentils. And in Greece, it'll be very simple, just lentils cooked with maybe onions, and that's it. In Cyprus, it's a bit more Middle Eastern. It's called mujendra, which you have in the Middle East. There'll be onions, tomatoes, sometimes spinach, cumin. Really lovely. It's one of my favorite things in the world, a bit of vinegar. Then you've got drahana, which is another soup. This is a soup. Drahana is something I could not put in the book because it's not accessible, really. It's basically bulgur wheat that is soured with yogurt and dried in the sun, and they're like rusks. It's an acquired taste. Cypriot people are going to kill me. It's not my favourite thing in the world. But what I love about drahana is it has broken up vermicelli in it, which makes it thick, and then lots of cubes of halloumi. So as a kid, I would pick out all those cubes of halloumi, and my yaya would go mad at me. So I was like, listen, let's have a play. I've done phagi, drahana's not accessible, let's put the two together. And this is what's created. It's a lentil dish, super simple, made with broken up vermicelli to make it creamy, laced with cubes of halloumi. It's so store cupboardy. Apart from the halloumi, it's just all store cupboard, puree, onions, cheap as chips. And it's one of those things that's just so just comforting and Moorish. I made it for Ravneet Gill recently, actually, when she had her baby, because lentils are good for iron and, you know, and she was in love. She kept sending me photos that her and her husband were arguing over the last portion. But I just think it's a very understated, which I had to put it in the title. Because I think with those sorts of things, if you look at the ingredients lists, you're like, all right, some lentils and an onion. But it's so much greater than some of its parts. And I think it's knockout.
Yeah. Can you tell us the joke about what the cheese said when he saw himself in the mirror?
Hello, me. I had to. Listen, I had to have some cheese chat. And I had to have a cheese joke. I love a cheese joke. I love that joke.
I hadn't heard that so one. Things on sticks, the whole chapter. People who listen to the show will know that I do ask for a food moment with a page number, and it normally is one recipe or a moment in time. No, the whole chapter, says Georgie Hayden. I love everything about this mini chapter, she says. Go on, why did you choose the whole chapter?
Because it's called Things on Sticks. So I just think, like, when I was writing it with my editor, I was talking to my editor and I was like, I just want a little sub chapter where I do essentially a really wicked marinade for each of your proteins, right? Listen, I'm Greek Cypriot. People know we love a souvlaki. We love a bit of a pork skewer, right? Gyros, kebabs, that's what they're famous for. So, and I just wanted to, I love barbecuing. I love cooking outdoors. So I just wanted almost like a little guide, as it was, that each protein, so a vegan option, a veggie, fish, whatever. And so it's not a massive chapter in the book, it's small. It's called, and I was talking about it as Things on Sticks, and they were like, well, you should call it that. And I was like, so I did. You know, and I think that chapter, the reason I chose the whole chapter is it's almost shows the playfulness of the book. I think it's a good example of how the book is accessible. Each skewer recipe is quite short. I actually think the best recipe in there is the mushrooms.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's like five ingredients. It's just a mustard thyme, you know, super easy. And honestly, I did it for a charity dinner last week, and the dinner was in like quite a dark church. And a friend of mine pulled me over and she was like, your chicken kebabs were so delicious. I was like, I didn't do chicken kebabs, son. She's like, no, your course, because it was different courses by different women. I was like, I did mushrooms. She was like, they weren't mushrooms. You know, easy, cheap. Yeah. It's vegan just by default, not because I, you know. Yeah. So I'm really proud of that chapter. I think it's fun. And yeah, I think it's a good way of showing the book, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You say that these are your best recipes ever. You say that the book was liberating to write. And then you give me feta cherry and white choc cookies. Is that what's liberating about this book?
Yeah, I think so. I think I had that fun with Stirring Slowly. But that feels like a very long time ago and a world away now. You know, my voice is louder now. And I think the thing about Taverna will always, they'll always all have a place in my heart for different reasons. But the fun and the liberatingness comes from when to write a cookie recipe that's got feta in it. And I tested that recipe, I think, 8 to 10 times until I was like spot on perfect, you know, happy with it. And I think that's a really, that cookie recipe is just a good example of the playfulness. It's really delicious. I'm really conscious of not creating recipes just because they're gimmicky. You know, I think sometimes there is that as well, especially where the food world is. There are so many voices and there's so many people trying to stand out. Social media, love it or hate it, you know, and that's fine and that's great. And there's, you know, and then sometimes I see things, I'm like, oh, is that just because you're putting two things together, but that sounds sickly, or I'm not sure. Or, you know, we all want the next, what is the word, viral, whatever. So I'm conscious of not just creating things for the sake of like a gimmick. But I remember when I first saw feta being used in a cookie, it was an American publication. It was a while back. It wasn't the same. It was like a dark chocolate thing. And I just made it out of curiosity. I was like, I love that salty sweet combo. I put honey on my halloumi. I put apricots on my halloumi. So why can't it go? And we have a sweet in Greece and Cyprus called burekia, and they look like ravioli, and it's anari, which is like ricotta, sweetened with cinnamon and then deep fried in the middle of that. You know, so we use cheese sweet. It's not weird. So anyway, I wanted to have a play and I just wanted to make sure it was worthy rather than gimmicky. And I feel like that one nailed it, you know?
Nailed it. What's the Greek for nailed?
I don't even know. I don't know. Do we have a phrase? It's bomba. We would say bomba when it's like something's wicked.
You've started a podcast and a Substack called Family Feed.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So, the Substack's, yeah, it's going to hopefully launch this week. Family Feeds. So I've got, I'm very fortunate, my lovely friendship group, we all work in telly or media. And we've always said for years, we're like, oh, let's make something. And then it came about, you know what it's like when you're creative, you don't often get a minute to stop. And you're on this, you know, this hamster wheel of responding. I feel like I respond to stuff a lot and I don't actually have time to just go and do something for the sake of it. I went to art school and it was very much encouraged that when you're in art school, you just create. Just because otherwise you don't, I'm trying to explain to my daughter now, you don't just go and make your final piece. To get to the final piece, you have to create loads of crap first and you have to play. And I think when you're creative and in our industry, you don't often get that opportunity. So I was having 2 months. I was like, I'm just going to take a second. It was over Christmas, so it was busy anyway. And I ended up going for a meal with my mate and he has a podcast company and he was like, I've got an idea for you. And I was like, this is either going to be wicked or it's not going to work, because the idea was a cook-along. And he said, why don't we do it in your kitchen? You can have guests in your kitchen and then you cook for them in real time a meal for whatever their family situation is. So we've got single parents, we've got mums with three kids, we've got a single guy who's a vegan. So different variations of what family means to people. And we did a test. It went brilliantly. So we've recorded 9 now. And it's been amazing. And actually, it's such a good skill set to sort of like, I do all the live TV and I love the live TV, but I love the fact that I can cook an entire recipe in real time. And people send me photos and they've started the recipe at the beginning with me and they finished it and they've got a meal.
You know, I do a lot of food writing retreats here and I'm pushing all my people onto Substack and there is a kind of an explosion of voice when they get on there. How are you using the podcast and the Substack together? What's the plan with the Substack?
So the plan with the Substack is it's going to be the same. So it's going to be Family Feeds. And the idea is every week, it will be a different recipe to the podcast because we want to encourage people to listen to that, but it will be a family recipe. So same premise. All the recipes I'm cooking on the pod are simple, easy, cooking in sort of 30 minutes whilst you're listening. And it will be the same on the Substack. So it will be maybe recipes that are slightly things that I can't necessarily do on the pod, like because they're a tiny bit longer or because there's so much sizzle or, you know, whatever, something like that. So it will be every week, whoever signs up will get a recipe to feed family and they're all vetted on my children, you know, tested by kids, and it's stuff that I would I'll give people variations if they're depending on the ages of kids or if they're a single person or they're a couple and they want to freeze. So it'll be that idea of just like all household eating, whatever your household is.
Yeah. I mean, we talked at the beginning of you kind of coming full circle, you finding your voice, you feeling very comfortable about who you are. That gives you a really great platform. People love to watch you get there and then they love it when you're actually there. What can you do with that now? How do you see the next 5 years?
Gosh, that's really good, because that's a really interesting question, because I've been really fortunate that after I left working with Jamie Oliver and I've been freelance, not actually for that very long now, maybe 6-7 years, that before that I was employment, of just being very reactive. And I'm sort of conscious of that, which is a fortunate position to be in. But at the moment where, you know, I've got this book coming out, lots of amazing opportunities, I feel very grateful. But, you know, what do I want? I have actually, which is quite rare for me to have an idea so soon, I have got an idea for another book, which would be, I'm not going to say what it is, but it will be, because I haven't even done my proposal yet, but it would be something quite different. And I think depending on how that goes, that could almost give me enough sort of to do basically around that. So it's nice just having a minute to think about not just creating for sort of commercial reasons, like actually, what is it I want to do? I've done the 4 books. Where do I want to go next? What is it I want to say and do? And I think it is a big question. I'm not really answering it annoyingly, but only because I sort of have got a slight plan and I don't want to jinx it. But I don't know. Also, I'm quite free spirited. I like just being able to just, you know, on top of that, on top of the next book and next whatever it is, what I really want to do is buy a bit of land in Cyprus and make something. And something me and my husband talk about quite a lot. And I think we will do that. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it'll just be like a nice little home. I don't know if it will be some sort of cookery situation. Don't know, but I definitely want to do something over there. So we'll see. Watch the space.
Thanks for listening. Do head over to Extra Bites on my Substack to get a taste of some of Georgie's gorgeous recipes from Greekish and a little something extra. And I'll see you next week.